Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport, the record book.
Welcome once again to the latest edition of the Game Day, the Record Book podcast with me, Danny Kelly, and my fantastic array of co-hosts. I'll tell you about that in just a second. You know the story here. We take the weekend's action and we discuss the best and worst performances, heroes, villains. That's the theory of it. It usually ends up in discussing, in last week's case, Andy Reid and how he got that big shirt to play in for Spurs. Other times we've ended up talking about going to football on a bus and all the rest of it. In theory, I'm making an actual physical Game Day record book for the end of the season, which will be given to one of you, the loyal listeners. I have to say, it's not coming along very well so far. I've got the big glittery book. Jeremy, our producer, provided me with that. And I've got the crayons. My niece, Kelly, yes, she's called Kelly, has provided me with those. But I haven't made much of a start. But by the end, it will be fantastic. So help me get through today's edition of the podcast, to which, of course, you are so welcome. I'm delighted to say, making a very welcome and very quick return. I kind of think somebody might have dropped out. It's Martin, a broadcaster, West Ham fan, DJ, all-round broadcasting legend, Mark Webster. Hello, Mark.
Do you know, if you need anyone to fill a giant hole, look no further. By the way, if you look at Terence Stamp, has got a lovely hand when it comes to calligraphy.
Where's he going with this? Book doing,
well, you just said you're going to get the record book done.
Oh, yeah.
And I interviewed Terence Stamp a couple of years back.
Yes.
When he was making a film. And we're talking about it because he comes from Canning Town. He comes from where my mum came from.
Star Lane.
He's talking about his life just around the corner from Star Lane, which, of course, is where David Essex went to school.
Yeah, near the Tate and Lyle factory. Left that terrible smell around the place the whole time.
Tate and Lyle was the
one.
That's where she came from. And Terence Stamp said, "Here, I'll give this to your dear old mum." And he signed a little thing to her, and it was beautiful. So he's got a lovely hand.
This rather reminds me of something I did on a previous radio show with the boy Baker, where we were comparing. We got a calligraphy expert in to look at hundreds of footballers' autographs, see what they could tell you about them. And the one that we really started to focus on was the person who wrote his name in not joined up writing, just wrote the individual letters.
Nice.
I won't spoil it for you at this stage because I actually met him. He's a very nice man. Former England international. We'll leave it no stronger than that for now. We'll come back to this perhaps later in the show or later in the whole season of podcasts. Joining Mark as well, I'm delighted to say. I hope I'm able to do joined up writing. He certainly can do joined up thinking. Very good player in his time. Very West Ham heavy show here. Former West Ham player, Crystal Palace, Cardiff, he asked me to say. Yeah. And of course, over 300 caps for Wales. I'm delighted to say Danny Gabbadon is making his debut. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Danny. Thank you for having me.
Don't be confused by the two Dannys.
I'm going to say Danny heavy, if you don't mind.
Sure. And that, of course, is what the ladies want at all times. Oh, no, heavy Danny. Separate thing.
Angle ball in is a good one. Headed down and in by Ayew. He's offside. Flag has gone up. Now, that will be checked. That will be checked. Ayew has found the back of the net. He's disputing the decision. It's a goal. Crystal Palace have taken the lead here. Crystal Palace look like they're doing it again. On the road, they are a dangerous team. West Ham 1, Crystal Palace 2.
And Wolves can break here. Traore, who's round for Antonio Traore for his second of the match. 1-1 scores! Adama Traore secures the 3 points for Wolves here at the Etihad.
having spent 5 minutes winding our way towards the start of the show, why don't we try and come out of the starting gate like the number six dog at Catford, if you like. Performance of the week. This is how it starts, Danny. We try to talk about performance of the week, and it usually ends up, as I say, discussing the inside of someone's car. look, why don't we start with you, Mark, because you seem to have the most notes in front of you. Who's your performance of the week?
Oh, copious. I was there yesterday, London Stadium, and that was the Saturday game, of course, in the evening, tea time kickoff, which provides you with no real opportunity to know what time to have your meal at night.
Yes. Yeah.
It was very confusing.
Well, I think that might be like deliberate because they want to sell you the food at the stadium where you can pay your £7
well,
for a pie.
That can't be your evening meal.
No.
Standing up food is not your evening meal. So we had me, my son, and my grandson, and loads of chicken nuggets in the car, which was probably worse. Actually, it's a bad option. But Crystal Palace, and credit where it's due, not least of which is seeing that up close and personal, seeing the way they do their business, is a remarkable thing. And they deserve to get the win. The worst thing they deserve to do is come away without losing. I would give them that. You know, it's a funny old game, and there was a couple of, you know, arguably questionable decisions that weren't. But the main reason I picked them is because of only last month, the diatribes and criticism they were getting from their own manager.
Yeah.
Let me take you back to September, those balmy evenings. And there was an evening down at Selhurst Park, and it was called the Palace for Life launch, and it's a big thing they do, big charity thing, and Roy Hodgson was the guest.
Yeah,
so he turned up, and all the Palace of Life just sounds like a kind of like a prison film now, because he sounds like the warden when it comes to the motivational speech that he gives. He says, "Okay, I like to say, yeah, it's going to be a great season." I'm paraphrasing bits.
Yeah,
but there are not going to be rainbows and blue skies. There'll be plenty of fighting and heartache. That's what he told gathering.
And he also said at the start of another interview that I saw, he said, well, our big target this season is to avoid relegation. He's the only one who's allowed to say that, isn't he, Roy?
Yeah.
I'm not totally
convinced that the fans were that wild about that.
Two things about this, Danny. I mean, I admire Crystal Palace. One, their away form shows you that. That's when you judge a team. What do they do away from home? It's all right when there's 56,000 people cheering you on. What are you doing away from home? And their away form is fantastic. And also, along with Burnley, am I gone mad? Are they the only two teams in the Premier League who even bother with defence now?
Well,
defending.
They're well drilled. You can see they get on the training ground, and their managers. Basically, I think it's monotonous, some of the training at times. But, you know, if you're getting results, if you're organised, then as a player, you'll kind of accept it. And, you know, those two managers are very good at that.
Doesn't it? You have to understand about the gap between the two centre-halves and the full-backs. You have to understand about the gap between your line of four and the midfield four. In their case, it's usually four, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or three, whatever they're doing at any given
seven,
time.
I think it was.
I've seen them line up 10 across their own penalty area.
That's why Palace are so good away from home, because they do play and set up like an away side generally. Even at home, they kind of play that way, and it's so difficult to break down. You see a lot of teams now, they want to try and play in between the lines and get in those pockets of spaces, and you have to be well drilled as a side to stop teams doing that. And I couldn't really see West Ham scoring, to be honest with you, until they put that lovely passage of play together.
It was the thing, and where they're cute as well, Palace, and this is credit, I mean, I know he may not be there forever, but Will Zaha works like a Trojan for them and takes so much attention away from, they play Schlupp as the left-sided attacker.
Townsend can't go to
and
game
they gave acres of space, and then but Townsend came on and of course made a massive difference. So he's got the right kind of attacking players when required,
and he's doing all this often with Christian Benteke on the pitch. It's like a game to them now, Palace, isn't it?
Can we do it?
Yeah, we'll play Christian this week. We'll play with 10, how it goes.
He got 2 minutes, I think, for Christian.
And lucky to get them the way he's performed. Thank you very much indeed for that. That was quite a remarkably potent dissertation on why Crystal Palace should be the performance of the week. You're going down a league, Danny.
I have to go with Stoke City.
Yeah.
My fellow Welshman Nathan Jones has been under all kinds of pressure. Was it, I think, going into the weekend, two points from 10 games.
Three wins in a long time.
Yeah. Off the back of a big loss to Huddersfield. I know him a little bit, yeah. Come across him. Had a little spell as caretaker at Cardiff City, and we actually played Brighton. And he was kind of just learning his trade at that point. He was one of the, you know, I think he was a first team coach at the time. So come across him, know him a little bit, and I'm absolutely delighted to kind of see them get a win on the weekend.
He's an intense man, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Danny, you've played in both divisions, and I suspect you've also been promoted and or relegated up and down.
Yeah.
What has gone on at Stoke City? I mean, players play in the Premier League, and I'm sure it's wonderful. You can go into nightclub and say, see me, Premier League player, darling, oh yeah, all that. Yeah. And the money is poured through your letterbox each Monday morning like shovelfuls of dough just fall through a door. But when you get relegated, isn't it part of your responsibility to carry on playing for that club and try and sort it out?
It certainly is. But some players, unfortunately, they don't have that mentality. I think that when you get relegated, the dressing room almost becomes fragmented a little bit. There's players who have maybe played in the Championship, have got you to that point of getting in the Premier League, were still there and understand what the Championship is all about. Then you have players who have been brought in on big money when you get to the Premier League, and then suddenly you get relegated and they're like, well, I don't want to be here anymore. And it's, you just don't have the right mentality, I don't think, for the group. And I think that's been a big problem for Stoke.
Was he naive? Because the Cowleys took Huddersfield on, which feels like a lesser version of Stoke, because they don't carry quite as much emotional Premier League baggage as Stoke do. Was Nathan a bit too much ego involved in this decision making there? Because Luton's a brilliant little place, a little petri dish in which he can form his ideas. But is he naive going to Stoke and thinking he can do the same thing?
Well, that is the problem with, you know, these young managers trying to make their way in the game. Particularly, you know, when you start at a kind of lower level, I think you can influence those kind of players a lot easier. Yeah. And then when you start,
well, they're relying on you
job,
to pay their mortgages. It's different once you get a bit higher up the league.
Yeah. You could look at the likes of Gary Rowett going there, stepping into a bigger job, found it difficult. And suddenly you're dealing with players with bigger egos, on big money. A lot of people probably looking at Nathan Jones and saying, who are you, kind of thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And if you come in with that bit of arrogance, I mean, he's come out after the win on the weekend saying, you know, pundits saying I'm arrogant, this, that, the other. It's not true. You obviously haven't been inside the four walls of the training ground and stuff. That's not how I am. But that's what the rumours have been, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is quite strong-minded. And his views.
Are you just choosing Stoke because they beat Swansea?
Well, Swansea were the top of the league. I saw Swansea.
Yeah, but you're a former Cardiff City player, aren't you?
How many whammies is this one?
Hear him reversing out our answer. Beep.
Yes, very nice too.
No, but I just thought the pressure that he's been under.
Is he saved, do you think? Because he would have been done,
possibly not.
International week.
Well, that's probably thrown a conundrum up to the Stoke board.
Yeah.
Yes, it's probably made the decision more difficult, but the international week is, as we all know, danger time for managers.
Yes.
Are we really going to go through this whole performance of the week at the start of the show here and not mention the team that's won at the Etihad? It doesn't seem very likely to me. I mean, Wolverhampton Wanderers, who have had a sticky enough start to the season themselves, they there have been people who are thinking, well, Manchester City got 8 last time at home. They could easily knock up 10 here. Yeah. And yet the final result, 2-0 to Wolves, tells me that that's the performance of the week. Manchester City had their traditional 17 or 18 pots at goal. Oddly, only 2 of them on target, which tells you that they aren't firing on all cylinders. The defeat at Norwich, the home draw against a useless Spurs team, tells you they're not quite at it. And I wonder whether it's a nervousness, Danny, and I'm bigging up central defenders here, caused by losing Laporte, and everything about the team is slightly 5% nervous now because they don't have what they need at the back. But Wolves took tremendous advantage now, and one of my favourite players, Adama Traore.
Yeah.
What a sprinter he is.
He goes. Yeah, he goes at you.
That boy can move. Now, obviously, it doesn't always result in anything to do with football. That's not unfair, is it? And he is built like a sprinter as well.
So
I was thrilled for him today to see him turn two of those incredible flashes of speed into actual football incidents. To do it at Manchester City, to lead to a 2-0 victory, he was part of a tremendous Wolves performance. And they're doing this without Doherty as well, I think really makes their team much more balanced.
Yeah.
Much as I admire Crystal Palace, and obviously anyone who beats Swansea is a big deal, Danny, I get that. But Stoke City, I think it's got to be Wolves because they won at Manchester City.
Unless we forget as well, they've got the Europa League campaign. Yeah. Is going how they planned.
Good win.
We saw Burnley absolutely stumble at the blocks, didn't we, when they tried to get both right and failed in both territories. No league points. No Europa League run.
I don't know why I'm looking at poor old Danny here just because he's a professional, but I never get this. Half the time we're told, oh, we're not really up to full speed yet in the Premier League. That was that bad result because we're not, wait till October till we're all fully fit. And yet the teams in the Europa League have had extra games. Oh, no, we're a little bit jaded now because we've had the extra games. Well, you can't have it both ways, it strikes me.
No, it is a mentality thing, I think, as well. But they seem to have to... Well, he seems to have Pep's number a little bit, doesn't he? I think Nuno.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He does indeed. Danny, because you're the newcomer here and because we like the cut of your jib, I'll let you make the first case. You can stick with Stoke City or you can be persuaded by the erudition of myself or Mark for Crystal Palace or Wolves.
I'm going to stick with my original decisions. City.
Now, this is the kind of stubborn stuff we were expecting from the Gabardon, I've got to say.
It felt so less Stokey, so much more Swansea-y, though, didn't it? I don't know.
Once I thought pulled him on that, he was surely back off from the idea of Stoke City. It's somehow performance of the week, which means you and I have to sort this out now between ourselves, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. I'm giving it you. I enjoyed the fact that, I mean, the Palace are in this amazing position, but Wolves are fighting on two fronts and they go away Man City.
And there's argument. I mean, we're, a quarter way through the season now. They're probably not the best team ever to arrive in the top four, are they?
No.
Indeed, one of the people who makes this podcast is not in the room now, thankfully, says they're the very worst, and we'll discuss that a bit later, I think.
You're not obliged to do it the same way.
Well, I'm.
They're allowed to do it any way they want.
I'm going Gabardon here. I'm sticking with my own idea that it was Wolves. And so there we are. The performance of the week, thank God, is Wolverhampton Wanderers.
The record book.
And there's the full-time whistle. Brighton are going to revel in this. But it is an 18th defeat in 40 games since the start of 2019. For Tottenham Hotspur, and this capitulation was the worst of the lot.
Of course that I feel that we are all together, no doubt.
There goes the final whistle, and you know what, that is a really thoroughly well-deserved 3 points by Newcastle United. Looking at the Manchester United team, they look a real shadow of themselves, lacking in ideas, no imagination whatsoever. They just look slow and a bit ponderous. It's finished at St James's. Newcastle 1, Manchester United 0.
They're human beings, really working hard in training every single day, and they need to see the results of their hard work. We don't get them results, and of course that's going to affect everyone.
Well, if the performance of the week was controversial, there's plenty to choose from. The worst performance of the week, the mugs of the week, if you like, just an amazing field of clubs to choose from. We almost had to do two each, but we decided we'd stick at one. And Danny Gabardon, you were working here for Talk Sport over the weekend, and you saw the performance of the team that you picked for worst performance of the week.
Yeah, have to go with Manchester United, Danny, I'm sorry.
Stinking, wasn't it?
As you said, there were one or two other bad performances as well. You could look at the Everton result.
We will, don't worry about that.
But having been up close and personal watching United, I just couldn't believe how poor they were. You look at that kind of Newcastle United, Manchester United fixture over the years, and it's always kind of produced lots of goals, exciting games, but going into the game, looking at all the stats, you actually thought it's probably going to be a 0-0 because both teams have struggled to score goals this season. But United, you're just looking at their starting 11, what they had on the bench, how they played. I mean, just the lack of kind of urgency, no idea in the attacking areas how to get the likes of Rashford, Daniel James on the ball. It was just
poor old Marcus Rashford looks like a broken reed at the moment, doesn't he?
He looks lost.
Shivering, playing football.
Actually know where he's playing.
No.
I don't know where he's playing. He started as kind of the main centre forward today and spent all of his time kind of in wide areas, didn't really get on the ball. It was just a really kind of subdued performance from him.
Mark and I are men of a certain vintage, so we can remember bad Manchester United teams before they pulled themselves together.
It has happened.
But you played against them for the last 15 years or so. Is this the weakest Manchester United squad in 11
years? By far. Not even close. I mean, so many world-class players in my time when I played against them. You were beaten in the dressing room, in the tunnel.
Definitely.
Almost. You'd look across and you'd see, you know, world-class player after world-class player after world-class player, and you'd just be thinking, let's keep the score down today. If it's 2 or 3 and we get out of Old Trafford, losing 2 or 3,
travels all round, isn't it?
But you know what? They're allowed to be. I mean, everyone's allowed to be ordinary. You know, they've got no rights, even though they are. And they've chipped away at it for the last several seasons.
When
you spend
900 million,
been committed to Project No Good, haven't they? really have.
And they've gone for it by jingo. But the bit that gets me, I think, okay, like, fine. So there's still progress, and give them a bit of time. But the last three games, you know, you had they had Arsenal, they had AZ, they played with that terrific 0-0 on the plastic. They don't have to all be brilliant, but my word, you want a performance, you want some effort, don't you? Things that aren't necessarily all about great players.
Yeah, I think a lot of times your team are a reflection kind of your manager and their kind of personality. And I look at Solskjaer and, well, I actually know him because I did work under him for a few weeks when he was Cardiff manager.
Yeah.
You know, he's a fantastic guy,
lovely man. That's evident, isn't it?
Yeah, but you need a bit more than that as a manager. You need to be able to strike fear into your players at times and, you know, let players know when they're not pulling their weight. And I wouldn't say he really has that. And I just think your teams then reflect you, your personality as a manager.
And there's also the chaos that goes on at that club just now, you know. The goalkeeper has played poorly by his own standards for 18 months, so they give him a £350,000 a week contract.
And
allowed to sack his own coach.
It looks absolutely terrible. Then, I mean, I understand. If they thought Lukaku was toxic in the club, of course you must get him out. Same with Alexis Sanchez. But you must replace him.
Yeah.
It's not enough to hope that the gods of football will allow you to transform Marcus Rashford into a very quick, wide player, which is what he is, into a centre forward, which is what they need. And for me, and I watched the game while I was broadcasting, there's that moment, the most un-Manchester United moment in history, where they had a free kick 4 minutes into injury time, where they looked like they could possibly get the old Fergie time goal and salvage something from the game. Their goalkeeper was brought up. This is Manchester United in the Premier League, forced to bring their goalkeeper forward for free kicks. And then the free kick itself, I'm not sure, it might have been Pereira who took it.
Yeah.
The free kick itself went out of play.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter, they brought up 10 goalkeepers.
Wow.
And the substitutes going to come on, and the club administrators. They weren't going to score because nobody can take a free kick.
It just shows the lack of quality that they have. You know, Pereira on free kicks. You look at their back four, it wouldn't even get in the top 10, I don't think.
I feel sorry for Ashley Young. At his age, Ashley, having given the service he has to that club, he must be thought, either I'll be earning a fortune in China or I'll be lying in Marbella with people bringing me drinks with little umbrellas in the top. Instead, he's been forced to run up and down the left wing for Manchester United, aim, right?
And by the way, in a game in which, and I defer now to the centre-half unit again, Lindelof sat in the stands, arguably their best centre-half, because he was, and I quote, sore.
Unbelievable.
Ooh.
I mean, I couldn't even get out of PE for being sore. how does he get out of playing in
this
the
is the worst.
League?
Remember when Marcelino was playing centre-half for Newcastle and he broke his finger and missed half a season with a broken finger? Had the bloody thing amputated if you want to play football.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you have to question some of these United players and how much they actually want to play. You know, Pogba's been in and out. Martial's been out for a long time.
Yeah.
Luke Shaw, I think, was a hamstring. And he's been out for, at least probably 4 or 5 weeks already.
Well, I guess if you're injured, you're injured. But the ones on the pitch don't really want to play. That's the big issue.
Yeah.
Which takes me to my worst performance of the week. I'm doing something unusual here. I'm having to combine, through bitter tears, two performances. Well done, Tottenham Hotspur. Not only did you manage to...
this is
not only did you manage to organise for me...
It's not another double, is it, Dan?
Well, first of all, the club is 135 years old and has just moved into a stadium that is the wonderment, to use a word, of the Western world. How best to baptise this stadium than to break your own worst ever record? I don't count the 8-0 against Cologne back in the day in the old, the Intercity Cup, whatever it was called, because Spurs had amateur players, with Alan Pardew captaining them. Is a long story, isn't it? So this is their worst ever score at home in 135 years of football. All right, I understand it. Bayern had 8 shots, 7 of them went in. But part of that was they were being allowed to have shots. So that's bad enough. And you let an ex-Arsenal player score 4 times against you.
Yeah.
So obviously, to put that right, you'll go down to the South Coast against a Brighton team who struggle to score once a month. Mm. And we'll put them to the sword and we'll forgive you the game against Bayern Munich. Oh no, in the first minute, Eric Lamella turns his back on a cross so that he won't get hit and made sore by it. Then the goalkeeper...
Because you could be out for weeks if you get sore.
You could be sore for weeks,
know, be
yeah.
Be careful.
Then the goalkeeper, captain of the world champions, let's not forget that as well, decides that following one or two other indiscretions in his own six-yard box, that I'm going to drop this ball at Mopé's feet. I felt a bit sorry for Ugo then, because obviously that injury is horrible. But to be fair, if you'd pushed that ball over the bar, you wouldn't have fallen back into the net. And so you wouldn't be injured now either. I mean, I don't know what's going on at Spurs. I don't believe the tittle-tattle on Twitter, because how will we know who is sleeping with whom? I don't believe that the manager has lost the dressing room, because we just don't know anything about that either. All I know with the evidence in my own eyes, that a team that used to press other teams to death now can't be bothered to do it. And as a result, their ageing defenders are getting caught more and more on the edge of their own box. Terrible, terrible. 10 goals in 4 days. Hats off to Tottenham Hotspur. No, worst performance of the week.
Terrific effort. Dan, everything Dan just... I don't know if you was listening. Danny Kelly, the other Danny, was just talking about Tottenham there for a second.
Yeah.
I don't get... I'll accept this notion that players about their futures and all this kind of stuff. How do really good players collectively become so lackadaisical together? Like, they can't all sit down and decide they're going to be ordinary. Does it just happen to a dressing room?
I think if 2 or 3 players have certain agendas, then it can just become poisonous and feed through the whole of the team. I think that Champions League kind of result was a big moment for Tottenham. I think if they would have won that trophy, I think it might have affected the dressing room in a much more positive way. Obviously, players who were maybe thinking about leaving might have had a different mindset and wanting to stay, the manager as well. I just thought it would have bred a lot of more positivity through the club. It's almost worked the opposite way.
Totally. And I wonder, Danny, I mean,
players
obviously
are now thinking maybe we're not good enough to win anything.
All teams, whether you're talking about, you know, an editorial team in a magazine or a football team, they are very, very fragile things. If you get them going well, it's a great fun and all this. But as soon as bits start to fall off, you'd be amazed.
So spinning plates, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, and I think the Champions League has a lot to do with it, although their bad form in the league started way before the Champions League final.
Well, and also the manager, who for months has been... how can you have a manager to disruptive influence and yet...
He needs to stop now, and I thought his press comments after the defeat at Brighton, for the first time, he wasn't saying, here's my agenda as well, I haven't been able to buy this or do that, and I wonder whether he is now working out the fact that he's part of the problem.
Yeah.
What I was going to say, Danny, and you know more about this than me, is that agents are involved here as well. Spurs have reached the Champions League final with a squad that is notoriously paid well, but not brilliantly, and of course their agents will be saying, well, you see, you've been in the Champions League now. You should be getting what Real Madrid's players are getting. Or even a club that's never going to get anywhere near the Champions League final, what PSG's players are getting. Mm. And we have a situation against Southampton last week, when Spurs were performance of the week, by the way, here on this insane podcast, where he's got 6 players on the pitch in the last 5 minutes against Southampton who he thought were going in the summer.
Yeah.
It's a very odd situation. It's leading to some very, very bad performances. But not as bad, I would suggest, as what's going overall at Goodison Park.
Well, that's my particular choice. Yeah. Well, only because I'm feeling pretty bad about it, because I just assumed that this season, given the fact that we think we know the 1-2, and then the 3-4-5-6 looks a very open field.
Yeah.
But Everton have positioned themselves just nicely. They've got their manager. They've been buying apparently the way that he wanted to be bought, which means that Marco Silva's got the team with the pitch he wants. They announced with a lovely graphic, but whether it'll happen quite that way, this new stadium that ultimately, of course, will bring them crashing to the floor.
Down the docks, lovely.
Like what new stadiums what do. But Marco Silva, as the man in charge. Now, credit where it's due. If I'm looking for one of the Premier League managers to play at the Christmas pantomime, Captain Kirk from the original TV series, he's my man.
Yeah. He's definitely very televisual. He's good looking, isn't he?
He's got that. Look, he's got the quiff, he's got the sidies.
Yeah.
but he has not boldly gone to that training ground and ever got them to defend or practice dead ball situation. How can he be so lax? And how can a man, again, it's back to you, Dan, because you'll know the dynamics of this. How can his career appear to be so impressive for a few months every time he's somewhere, and then it just kind of fall off the edge of a cliff so apparently quickly?
Yeah, it seems like he can't seem to sustain things. Well, and a lot of it does come down to that, because maybe the defensive side of the game, you look at wherever he's been, it's always been a struggle for him. But I have to say, even like the attacking side this season with Everton is a struggle.
So that's also an issue, isn't it?
Let me just throw this at you. Everton conceded another set-piece goal. Only two teams in Premier League history have a worse record conceding from set-pieces at this stage of the season. Both were managed by Marco Silva.
Really?
Yeah.
He's got his hat-trick.
Yeah.
Wow. I just to kind of back it up or to endorse my point, the quotes after this line after the game, the fans have the right to be angry and I understand it 100%. If I'm a fan and that is my manager, his explanation is, yeah, I know, it's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. I'm really with you lot. We're rubbish.
Oh, that's good. That is mealy-mouthed, isn't it? To try and, I know how the fans feel. Do you?
Yeah.
The difference is you're getting 100 grand a week and we're paying to watch it.
Exactly right. Slight difference. So I don't know.
Have you done your coaching badges?
I've got my A license.
Yeah, so you've seen people working their butt off to get these.
Yeah.
What did Marco Silva have when he got the job in the first place?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think there are certain managers about who have a reputation without actually building one. And it's a bit of a myth for me. As you say, you know, he looks nice. He looks as if he plays his attractive football. He's a foreign coach, whatever. Yeah, let's get him in. And what has he really done when you think about it?
They paid a lot of money to get him there. So Everton, you can imagine their ballroom. They must be chewing the beards off their own faces thinking, we thought we'd absolutely nailed it here. And now, do they go, oh, have we reached that point? Is he gone? And we're talking again. It's back to the international break. Is he? Is he?
I thought he was. He'd be very, very lucky to survive the next couple of weeks. Mm. But next time we do this podcast, because of course international break next week, I'll be unsurprised if there was another name in the car park at Goodison. Danny, you went first last time. Mark's a good bloke. Let's let him go first. I mean, amazing field this week. Spurs for their 4 days of madness against Bayern and Brighton. Manchester United for the distance they've fallen from Manchester United, and Everton, who you rightly say, appear to be rudderless under Marco Silva. Want to stick with your choice or perhaps move on?
I would stick with my choice because, as I say, he's insulted me because I bothered to predict Everton to be a top 4, 5, 6 club. So it's a very personal attack. But those other two sides have provided me with, in my own way, much entertainment. Man United across three entire games, you know, in various different ways. But Tottenham, 10 glorious goals against them. I mean,
that is so West Ham. Now, he's going to back you up as well, isn't he? And I therefore will accept the democratic view of the people and remind myself that, of course, right now, if you're a Spurs fan, that clean sheet of Colchester looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
The Record Book.
Southampton 0, Chelsea 1. What a week it's been for Tammy Abraham, called up by England, and he's just helped himself to his ninth goal of the season.
We've had a good month. We've had a good, since international break, coming back, we've had a good month, and we need to make sure that continues when we start again.
Newcastle United 1, Manchester United 0. A really good, fast build-up as well by Newcastle United, and the ball has just been played out to the edge of the area, and it is Matty Longstaff who has got the goal. We have got 72 minutes on the clock. It's Newcastle 1, Manchester United 0.
Second half, I just saw Jack Laporte, I thought, oh, I'll just hit it. Get a good connection on it, and if it goes either side, the keeper, it's more likely going to go in from there. Obviously, the first one probably would have looked better if it went in, so that was a bit disappointing, but I'll take the second one from the Gallagher.
Yeah, welcome back to the Game Day Record Book podcast with me, Danny Kelly, Mark Webster, of course, and Danny Gabardon. As you heard there in the first half, Spurs have gone from last week's best performance to this week's worst performance. And that is the kind of inconsistency that makes this podcast the award winner it is up and down the country. Time to get on to our heroes of the week. I'm going to start, actually, because you both had a go at going first. And while you two are so biased about West Ham United that I actually can't really take anything that comes out of your mouths seriously, I will now prove that I am the voice of reason, rationale and unbiased, clear thinking. My hero of the week is something called the West Ham Way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the West Ham Way, I think, has, over the last 25 years, probably done West Ham United Football Club more harm than good, as fans pine and keen for something they remember from the days of Alan Devonshire and Trevor Brooking, and before that, of course, when West Ham won the World Cup against West Germany.
Thank you.
That was the all West derby, wasn't it, in the World Cup? West Ham versus West Germany.
One of my favourite West against West games I've ever seen.
All West derby. I've been quoted this season. I think West Ham have got the best squad of players they've had for a very, very long time. And the goal they got against Crystal Palace, we'll remind ourselves of the result later. The goal they got against Crystal Palace, I don't care whether it was scored by Bobby Moore and Martin Peters half a century ago or by the current crop of West Ham players, it was everything that I've ever heard about the West Ham Way. And, of course, it was also, because we don't want to be looking back in time, it's the most modern goal as well. It starts in their own half, where I think perhaps one of the four or five of them who are clustered together might want to belt the thing and get it out of danger. But in fact, they do that rondo thing that they do in training now, where somebody holds a bib and they pass it around him. It takes them five or six passes, including a lovely kind of nutmeg as well, to get the ball free. After that, the pace and the intelligence of West Ham United's players keeps the ball moving. It goes out to the right-hand side of the penalty area. The cross comes in. Even now, it should fail because West Ham haven't had a decent finisher for so long. Even now, it should come a cropper. And we don't have to talk about it. But Sebastien Haller is not that man. No. And he finishes off what I think was an 18-move pass. And I rarely bother to clap West Ham United in any meaningful way. When I saw it on the highlights programme on BBC last night, I didn't stand up. I would do too much red wine for me to stand up. But I certainly applauded. A brilliant, brilliant goal. And the West Ham Way for producing that is my hero of the week. And you two are going to vote for it. We might as well not have the rest of the discussion now.
Well, if I can put like a bit of... And of course, I've seen this left-footed, silky genius start many a move in a West Ham shirt for me, and he understands exactly that's how...
Yeah, conceded West, 65 in West, that right-hand
West
column.
West Ham
played
the ball there. That's, he understands that.
Danny didn't laugh when I said that.
But of course, he liked the rub of this somewhat. is that every time it happens, and I use the phrase every time very loosely, because it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, Halley's
Comet.
It
kind of reminds you of the thing that you think you saw.
Yeah.
The folklore, the myth of what you actually believe happened all the time. It's the fortunes, it's the bubbles that have been bursting constantly over our football grounds across the decades. It serves to remind you that that's what they want to do.
Mm.
But also remind you that it's not always that easy.
It's the brilliant goal devalued by the fact that they then, in a very West Ham way, contrived to lose the match to Crystal Palace.
Yeah, isn't it weird?
That is the West Ham way at the minute.
Funny, exactly.
That whole 90-minute performance, Jen. Yeah.
No, it wasn't like that in your day, was it?
Yeah, there was a little bit. It was a little bit, to be fair. But, I mean, I think if West Ham can play at that tempo more, then they will be a dangerous team this season. But the tempo's a little bit too slow for me in possession of the ball.
They are sporadic in tempo. Yeah. You'll get 5 minutes here, 5 minutes. And they've won games being conservative, then suddenly expansive, and getting the goal at the right time. But as you say, it does come back and bite them a bit. And I mentioned, obviously, that's why credit where credit's due to Palace is they didn't panic and they got the win the Palace way.
Yeah, well, a really fine goal. Who's your hero of the week, Danny?
Well, I was actually going to go with Aaron Connolly, who scored the two goals for Brighton, obviously on his debut for...
As a supporter of the Republic of Ireland, who are so desperate for anybody... I mean, we're so spoiled, of course. For 15 years, Robbie Keane scored all the goals in international football. He scored them against Germany and Italy and Brazil. Then he scored them against Moldova and Zivsniag and all the rest of it. Then suddenly, bang, a complete stop. Nobody scores at all. And maybe he's going to be one of the answers. Troy Parrott, there's one or two coming through now,
I think he's the first person to score since Robbie Keane. Two goals, an Irish kind of youngster since Robbie Keane, 1999 or something like that, I think it is. So, but certainly when I played, you had Shane Long coming through. You had
Shane's a trier, but he's just not a good finisher, is he? Kevin the same.
Yeah, but what I would say, they were hungry, young, hungry players who wanted to prove themselves. I used to hate playing against those boys, really tough battles. And he looks very similar, actually, Aaron Connolly. I thought he gave Alderweireld and Vertonghen an absolute nightmares.
Robbie Keane wouldn't be a bad comparison either, because if he's as a forward, Robbie Keane was never your obvious number nine, was he? So you're talking about, funny enough, he looks like Robbie Keane, or he plays like a winger. I mean, funny, we should talk about Marcus Rashford earlier, but he looks like he's capable of playing anywhere across that front line.
Yeah, but I'm not actually going to go for him.
Said that to make me feel happier about the world, which is good, even though it's against Spurs.
I know you're down, a bit low at the minute, Danny, so I'm going to go with Matty Longstaff, similar kind of.
I don't do low about Spurs, I get only angry. I'm absolutely blinking volcanically livid with the whole thing.
Yeah, so... young Matty Longstaff making his debut for Newcastle.
What a story.
It's a fantastic story. Alongside his brother, of course, Sean, who's an outstanding young prospect as well. 19 years of age, the youngest player to debut and score in the Premier League for Newcastle. And I have to say, he was absolutely outstanding. Could have had two goals, hit the crossbar in the first half.
They looked really comfortable, didn't they?
They bossed that midfield. The brothers bossed the midfield. You know, you're looking across at Manchester
United. And the North East has finally got a ginger-haired player who isn't going to get sent off in the third minute. We all know who I'm referring to. Hello, Jack.
Well, Matt is slightly the unlucky one, because you look at Sean and he's a bit more kind of strawberry blonde. But you can't argue against Matt.
Do you know how much fun it's got to be there out there? Is there an old school photo? Photographs, because there's one, and then there's the other brother, isn't there?
We shouldn't. I'm not having a pop of ginger. People, my favourite person in the world, my sister, is absolutely carrot topped. But he was also a little bit of credit here to Steve Bruce, who was under terrible 100%. Pressure. And goes to three at the back because it suits him, what he's always done, and then puts in a debutant. He must have known that the lad was ready for it. Fantastic.
Yeah, you have to give credit to Steve Bruce as well, because not easy when you're under pressure, when you're not getting results, to throw young players into the team. But hearing his brother kind of speak on the interview after, and he said, look, he's been the best player since pre-season and deserved his chance. So he's obviously been knocking on the door. Credit to Steve Bruce. He could have gone with a Shelby, a more experienced player, thrown him in, and run the show.
It is a bit easier for Steve Bruce to make those sort of decisions because he has the absolute unquestioned backing of the Newcastle fans, doesn't he?
You could hear that. Although I'd tell you what, there'll be a vault face today, won't there? There'll be a little vault face during the course of this time now, because he's got that win.
And so he's got
it right. So job done. Well done to him.
Who's your hero, Mark?
What a week for Tammy Abraham. Birthday, no less.
Yep.
England call-up, no less. He's also now got a record that matches, I think it's 8 goals, 8 games, I think the way it breaks down. Another young starlet who plays forward and also is a member of the England squad, Marcus Rashford. And it just makes me wonder a little bit whether the fact that Tammy Abraham, I mean, albeit by a somewhat circuitous route, he's getting himself the number 9 shirt at Chelsea, but he's had that time away to learn his trade, where Marcus Rashford's had to learn all of his trade, you know, at Manchester United, and are we seeing the results there? And that's almost why. I mean, that's pretty good for me. That's good enough for me. But I only learned by just checking his birthday that his first name's Kevin.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yep.
Really?
He's got 4 first names.
4?
Tammy's the 3rd.
Yeah.
His first name's Kevin.
Oh, in that case, he can play for the Republic, can
he's
he?
In. Anyone who... But it occurs to me, the reason I particularly go for him, because you look more Tammy than you look Kevin. I think Tammy suits him. Kevin's wrong.
I love to see a young player who people have doubts about step up to the plate. And also, with the premature retirement of Jamie Vardy from the England squad, at last they've got a direct competition for Harry Kane, a direct replacement they need to, and someone who can also augment him. You could put the two of them up there together. And I think that, you know, his England debut can't come quickly enough. And I had a feeling that he was going to be one of those that was going to make it, because not the previous season, the season before, was it at Bristol, where, you know, you're a Chelsea trainee, you're on a lot of money, and you get farmed out to a very unfashionable club, with all due respect to Bristol City. Did he moan? Did he groan? Did he gripe? No, he got on and scored a bucket load of goals and said, I'm a good footballer, me. I love him, actually.
That's why I wonder if all those loan deals have served him so well. As I say, because Marcus, if we make that comparison, you can do, because they're both young men who got the same kind of scoring record early in their life. But Marcus Rashford has had to do all of his learning in the glaring spotlight of being an Old Trafford superstar.
But Marcus has had 2 other disadvantages. They keep on trying to push a square peg into a round hole, and he has played, I mean, Jose Mourinho will point to the 2 trophies he won, but overall he's played in a team that doesn't serve their forwards very well. Chelsea under Frank Lampard purring along, as far as I can see. Jorginho's pushed a little bit further forward so that those passes mean something. Mason Mount can clearly see a gap in the defence. I thought Callum Hudson-Odoi for his first game back, fantastic.
Yeah.
God, this has been a sickening week, hasn't it? Spurs are terrible. Chelsea are good. Thank God for West Ham.
I don't know what's happening out there.
Who is your hero? That's all our heroes of the week there, isn't it? So Tammy Abraham, Matty Longstaff, or the West Ham way. Now, before you two pipe up with your claret and blue hearts, I personally, I've changed my mind now. I think the story is so brilliant. One's debut. Who did you make your debut against?
Ipswich.
Mm-hmm.
For
West Brom.
Yeah.
And I bet, do you remember much about it, or is it just a big blur now?
No, I remember a lot of things. I got man of the match, so I've definitely...
Oh, Gavin's on, everybody.
Throw that in there.
Well.
But I think a player's debut is such an important moment for them.
Yeah.
And even if they don't go on to have a great career, they can still say, I played professional football. But to do it in front of 51,500 people, to do it against the biggest club in world football, to do it and score the winning goal.
Next to your brother.
Next to your brother.
That makes huge.
Showing him up.
Yeah,
and your brother actually hands you the man of the match.
For me,
after.
I mean...
He's never going to mention that again, is he, though? That's the important thing.
Well, when he replaces the brother in the team, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it's the long staff, but I'll happily go with whatever you choose, Danny.
Surely, Mark. You're with me on this.
That's just... And listen, Tammy Abrams, he's got plenty of other things to be excited about, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
His birthdays, England caps, records. He's all right. He does know. Kevin, not this time.
Yeah. Give it to the youngster.
Very, very good. Cut to a flat somewhere in the Fulham Road, and a big tear runs down Tammy Abraham's face. I'm not the hero of the week on the Game Day Record Book podcast. Sorry, Tammy, your day will come.
The Record Book.
Origi flicks the ball over Pereira. Albrighton is back, but Albrighton has lost it. Mane, was that a penalty? It's a penalty to Liverpool. Sadio Mane upended. James Milner against Kasper Schmeichel, the England veteran. Sends the keeper the wrong way. It's buried into the left-hand corner of Schmeichel's net. James Milner, Jurgen Klopp, and the whole place goes ballistic.
The strikers, the modern strikers now, they're clever. He's had a touch and gone over. But I think if the referee didn't give it, I don't think anyone would have said it was a clear and obvious penalty. Yeah, but unfortunately, it went against us.
Which takes us, of course, nicely now on to our villain of the week. I'm going to start this because I don't think he's going to win. My villain of the week could be almost a new category, mug of the week. And once again, the Claritin Blue crossed hammers of West Ham United are hove into view. David Gold, part owner of the club, not the worst bloke I've ever met, actually. I spent some time with him, he was all right. But after Spurs were getting them the various parts of their anatomy handed to them at Brighton, he went on Twitter and he said, and Mark, you'll be able to tell me about his Twitter record very soon, and he said, oh, look at that, Spurs are getting beat 3-0 at Brighton. He didn't put ha, 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 crying face emoji, but he might as well have done. I've got to say, David, mate, you really want to save that stuff until your team has played, because, of course, within 3 hours, his own team had scored the goal of the weekend but still got beaten by Crystal Palace. And there was a part of me, I'm a nice guy, but there was a mean part of me went, they are, David. There's your la-ha-ha-ha. There's Spurs' defeat at Brighton. You've now lost at home to Crystal Palace. So that would be my villain of the week, but kind of just a kind of old mug of the week. But I believe he's got form on Twitter.
He does indeed, God bless him. He's out there giving it a go. And he embraces it. He's often got pictures of his family and friends, and which is always fun because, of course, he's got his daughters working at interesting part of the entertainment industry. I'll draw a discreet veil over that, although I don't think you can buy any discreet veils in the shops that they work in. But he's had an interesting time.
Moving their phone now.
He does try and engage, but he does get caught out. But I like this because it's innocent. And it's honest.
Yeah, I know.
But what he didn't do, which is what we're all doing, is muttering behind our hands, this might be the best day we've ever had.
Yeah, it could be,
It started so well. All we've got to do is get past... All we've got to do is get past Palace.
The thing about David is he's such a storyteller. I mean, I did my famous and award-winning show here on TalkSport. I did a long 3-hour interview with him for My Sporting Life. And when he told me that he's born in Green Street, and I totally believe that... His family were bombed out twice during the war and then had to move to a house in Green Street. This is a great story. It's only when he says to me, and you know what the address was?
I know.
442 Green Street. Then you start to think, is this true? Yeah. Am I being pulled here? This, because I didn't believe a word of that, I've got to be honest.
He was born at 3-2-1-1. He much prefers that system, yeah.
I'm surprised he actually did that, because I'm sure it's normally Mr. Sullivan that normally gets
Well, he has now famously gone very quiet.
Yeah, yes. He got told to, basically, didn't he?
He was seen to be trying to fill a vacuum when all wasn't so good there. And he was much more the attack dog of the partnership, where David Gold was just this kind of venerable old geezer.
Yeah.
He kind of is. You know, I mean that
He's definitely not, as you say, the Rottweiler of that association at all.
No.
Maybe David Sullivan, you two both, you've been around West Ham all your life. You've played for the club. Even if you wanted to buy a coat that made you look like a Soviet admiral, where could you get such an item? Where did he get that coat? You've seen it up close, I imagine.
I can only think a charity shop.
And he's worn it for 20 years, hasn't he?
He
loves that coat, doesn't he?
Like it a lot. Yeah, it's a strange situation. And they're a weird breed. But I read a piece the other day, and It was pointed out by John Dillon, who writes the Evening Standard, one of the classic West Ham paparazzi mafia, as is often been referenced. And he did point out, of course, if they may not be loved as a group, including Karen Brady up there, because they've had to make hard decisions. But he then went on to say, but at what point were we meant to be in love with our chairman? And it's a good point. I mean, it's football. And let's be brutally honest. If you go back through West Ham's history, we've had some notorious old rotters.
Oh, the Icelandic fella with a little bean of a head.
And back to the 60s, and so, like, really, it's just... There's no... But what they are now is high profile, isn't it? So that's the thing.
So welcome to West Ham History Month here on the BBC. who's your villain of the week, Danny?
I've got my defenders kind of hat on here a little bit, and I'm looking at the team who probably defends the least in the Premier League.
Wow, that is some accolade. There's a lot of those.
And probably the team with only one senior real defender in the team, that's Nicolas Otamendi. And I'm looking at his role in the first goal against Wolves, and nothing short of disgraceful, to be honest with you.
What is he trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Yes, what's his deal?
I think you see it from a lot of these kind of foreign defenders. In 1v1 situations, they tend to just kind of lunge in and commit themselves, and it's, I've got to go and win the ball. If I don't win it and you skip round me, it's okay, go and score kind of thing, which I just found really strange. And he constantly does it. You know, he's probably one of the worst. Well, he is the worst 1v1 defender, I think.
And yet somehow he has got 50 caps for Argentina. When I was a boy, if you played for Argentina at the back, it meant one, you were made out of solid granite, and two, you knew how to defend your goal. Those days clearly have passed us by. And wonder what Lionel Messi makes when he runs out with Nicolas Otamendi in the lovely...
Towering over him, by the way.
And then the lovely celestial blue and white stripes.
Oh, dear.
Are we going to win this World Cup? Oh, no, Nick's here.
But lest we forget, he got bought by Man City.
Yes.
I mean, you know, he was acquired to be a centre-half of Manchester City.
Yeah, but they bought Mangala as well. Yeah. They haven't got the best record in that department at this moment.
But what do they think they're looking at when they buy centre-halves like that?
Well, it was him and Mustafi at Valencia who played together, weren't they? And
right.
You can look at Mustafi,
good
he does
Lord.
Exactly the same thing. Commits
How many
himself.
Goals did Valencia let in? Must be thousands.
Well, they are a classic 4-3 team, Valencia, except when Benitez was there, when they sorted that out. They're still a team who like to win 4-3 or lose 4-3.
Right, that makes sense.
Now, this is interesting. So you've gone for Nicolas Otamendi and Manchester City's defence. Yeah. I've gone for a club owner. You've gone for a referee.
I have, because I'm not fingering Sadio Mane.
You're not what?
You're what?
That's correct. I am not. You heard me say it here. That's not the first time I say it, so I won't say first. The penalty that wins Leicester, wins Liverpool the game against Leicester. Now, it's a lot of dispute, a lot of conjecture. Mm. It's, you know, it falls right back into the modern way with the VAR. And it's been dished out by Michael Oliver. Now, Michael Oliver may still look like he could play the lead in Oliver, but he's been around forever.
Yep.
And only... 2 months ago, before the start of the season, he was very, very vociferous about advocating VAR in an interview with Martin Ziegler in the Times, in which he said, "I don't like the idea of driving for 4 hours knowing I've made a critical mistake," and describing VAR as the safety net that is going to make refereeing a better thing. It's 93 minutes in a 1-1 game. Mm.
Critical.
About as critical as life gets at any given moment in your refereeing career, one might argue. He sees a thing. I'm not saying that he necessarily doesn't see a penalty. All I'm saying is, why don't you believe your own words at this stage, Michael? Safety net. You have available to
you.
So
you think he should have let it go and let VAR make the decision?
He had the opportunity to check his own decision. Two ways. Asking the VAR to say, have I seen a foul before Mane goes down? And I won't argue that he dived after he was fouled, because I think they're two different things.
Yes, they are.
But equally, even if he's not bold enough to say, can you tell me if I was right? Because I think referees will struggle with that, having conversations with their peers saying, correct me if I'm wrong. He can go to that dusty monitor in the corner that's been gathered covered in cobwebs, and look at it and go, do you know what? Here's my safety net, 26-inch colour safety net. I got that wrong. It was his moment.
Dan, do you think it was a penalty?
It's a modern-day penalty for me.
Not a penalty then?
Well, no, it's slight contact and he...
That's right.
He makes the most
Mark
of it,
used the word foul. I thought it was contact. Mm. Now, whether it was a foul or not, I'm really not sure.
That's a tough one nowadays.
It is.
He actually takes a touch after and then
yes,
goes
he does.
Over, doesn't he?
I mean, what's left for defenders to do now? You can't do anything
anymore, really.
So how do you defend your goal? Once they're in the difficult. Penalty area, it's over,
it's
is
difficult.
It?
It's difficult. You can't lay your hands on a striker now. You can't, you know, one-on-one situations if you take the striker down.
I'm not suggesting you have to Hamza Chowdhury everybody you come across. but if you can't use any kind of physical tactic to block the goal off, then the game,
got the silhouette. It's gone, isn't it? With your arms and stuff now. It's difficult.
The silhouette, yeah, absolutely.
You can't be an Otamendi now almost. You have to, you know, read the game better, stay on your feet and stuff like that. And
But even then, if you make the slightest contact with a forward, they're going to throw themselves down to the ground. I saw Jorginho doing it for Chelsea today as well. Actually, in his own penalty area to get a free kick the other way. The tiniest touch, and that was a trigger for him to hurl himself to the ground.
The defence of that is that no referee... I remember one, I forget who it was now, but it might have been Matty Hughes going for a West Ham, when a referee actually gave a penalty when he stayed on his feet.
I know.
That was one time. Referee, you've got to go down or the ref doesn't make a decision. Yeah. So they provided their own problems here.
I feel like King Canute here, I hope this is not the wrong analogy, just endlessly trying to defend the game, just the game of football itself, from turning into hockey, where it's all about getting penalties.
That's how you win
the game. You just get penalties. And I think the rule about handball is right. You know, accidental handball by a defending player shouldn't be automatically a penalty. It's an accident. Attacking players, I'm all for disallowing the goal. I know Alan Shearer goes mad about it. It's not fair. But we don't want the game being decided by technical fouls against defenders. Mm. That's not what I pay £90, if you don't mind, in the new Enormo Dome to watch and see. I have to say, Danny, that that's a pretty convincing villain of the week for me. Poor old David Gold, he doesn't need an award.
He'll be back, Dan. He'll be back.
he'll get another chance.
There'll be more material available for you.
Are you happy to go with Michael Oliver?
I'm more than happy to go with that.
Out of 10, how good a referee was he when you had him as a ref?
Yeah, he was pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah.
But all it is, he's just
on his own petard in this particular instance.
Believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Listen, it's been an absolute joy. There's Michael Oliver is our villain of the week, and that's the end of this edition of the Game Day Record Book podcast. Me, Danny Kelly, Danny Gabadon, thank you very much for that debut. And Mark Webster, back by popular demand and as feisty as ever, even if there was a little bit too much West Ham for my taste in this show.
You asked me and Gabadon to come in.
Thank you for listening. Well, he could have talked about Crystal Palace more, couldn't he?
He did get one in on Cardiff. On Swansea. That's
it. Thank you very much for joining us. Join us again next week, and don't forget you can also download the appendix, a little bit of extra stuff that we do on this, and this week it's about the upcoming internationals, of course England, Wales and others. Thanks for listening. Cheers for now.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds, we set them. Form guides, we've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.